What's up, everybody? This is Neil Real, and this is Let's Please God, the ministry that helps you stay right with God, find victory over sin. And today I'm talking about narcissism again, this time the 10 tactics that the Jezebel spirit, the narcissist spirit, uses against you to, one, wrap you and get you inside of their web, and to abuse you and control you and dominate you. And I've touched on a few of these in the past, but I'm going to explain each tactic so that you can identify what's happening to you when you're encountering somebody like this. For me, I needed a term for some of the things these people were doing to me, you know, and so through my studies, I've learned what the terms are. And so there's at least 10 different tactics here, and let's get right into them. The first one is called the love bomb. Love bombing is when they flatter you, treat you very nicely, buy you things, maybe meals. If y'all having sex before marriage, it's going to be some good sex. Person's doing whatever they can, whether it's a relationship or, you know, it's two guys, or they're trying to do as much as they can to treat you very well. And this is designed to get you hooked on them, to earn your trust, and for you to invest so that you can become their supply. You know, that's the whole thing. They want to use you, drain you of your resources and time, devalue you, mistreat you. Everything that's to lift themselves up. Like I said, they're parasites. They're draining you so that they can live, basically. They can't be people on their own. They have to use other people to actually live. They're parasites, emotional vampires. So this is what they're doing, all in the beginning of the phase. So they're very nice to you. You may think this is one of the coolest people you come across. If it's a guy, she's coming at him from a romantic perspective, she's going to dress a certain way. She's going to treat him a certain way. Everything that make him want to be involved in her. He's going to think to himself, man, this is my woman of my dreams, and vice versa with a woman who's coming across a narcissistic man. She's going to think that's the man of her dreams. Okay. When it's same sex relationships, where it's, you know, two guys, one guy will pretend to be a really cool guy and like him, and to be, you know, this man will be looking at this guy, will looking at this other guy and say, oh, this is a cool guy. He's a friend of mine. And usually in these narcissistic relationships, one will try to pretend to be their elder. So the narcissist will try to pretend to be, one narcissist will try to be the either a spiritual father to them in a church setting, or a big brother, or somebody who's more knowledgeable than them. They'll patronize them a little bit. You'll see that. And same thing with women. If a woman comes along, she'll try to pretend to be like her spiritual mother, or a mother figure to her, or a bigger, older sister, something like that, to try to get in a position of authority over that person just slightly. Meanwhile, they're love bombing them. That's what the term is used here, love bombing. So they're making them feel loved. And this is not the love of God, of course. These people can't love you according to the scriptures, okay? They don't have agape love, but they can discover your love languages, as I mentioned long ago, in one of my articles, and mimic those. So if you like words of affirmation, they'll give you a lot of kind words. If you like spending time or gifts or touch, they'll do all this stuff to make you feel loved initially. And like I said, this is designed to get you hooked, earn your trust, and so that you invest in them. And then that's when they begin to take stuff from you, drain you of your resources and all of that. And they understand that, you know, normal people don't give up on relationships so easily. So if there's a problem, they'll try to work through it, you know. And so they understand that once you're hooked, you're going to put up with a lot of their mess until you realize who they are. They hope that you don't. But even so, once you're hooked into their web, their circle, when you realize there are problems, you're still going to try to work through them. You're not going to just give up on the person. And for relationships, when it's opposite sex, you know, where's a romantic relationship or whatever you want to call it, the love bombing phase can be very addictive to the victim. And they do this so that you get addicted to how they treated you. You may have never been treated that well by somebody else, but it was all a show, it was all a front. And it's designed to get you hooked. So when they do change and they show their real face and their mask is comes off, you're going to want them to put that mask back on. You're going to want to go back to the times when they were treating you well. And so you may stick around just for that, hoping that they'll change back to the person that they were, but they never will, because that was all a show to begin with. That was all designed to get you hooked into them, you know. And because there's sex involved, it's a bond there. There's all kind of stuff going on. So it's very, very problematic when a person marries a narcissist or they're in a sexual relationship with a narcissist, because there's a connection there that's deeper, because there's spirits in there. And it's their love, or the way they make you feel love, is addictive. So this is the first tactic that they use, and this is how they get entry into your life. So one of the things you can look at is when you're dealing with somebody for the first time is this seem too good to be true? They seem to be perfect. There's an indication that something may be off. Even during that time, you still will see disrespect. You may see things of that nature devaluing, but you'll be putting it off. So you have to be very open-minded and clear about what you're looking at. You can't just let yourself fall in love. Like, I don't believe in falling in love. Nobody should fall in love. You don't let your emotions take over when you're dealing with somebody. You know, you deal with people from a logical perspective, and don't let emotions just run wild. And another thing that you'll see, another telltale sign, is sometimes they want to force the relationship into something closer. Say, for instance, y'all dating for 3 months and not even want to get married. Like, that's too short of a time to decide if this, you want to be with somebody for the rest of your life. But for them, they know once they get that you're locked in from a marital perspective, that you have invested, and you're less likely to break up. So you'll put up with their mess for years, you know, because you're invested. You know, most people, like I said, they don't give up. A narcissist will give up on people quickly, very easily, because they have no care for commitment. They don't care nothing about none of that stuff. So, but for normal people, we have commitment. We'll stay in something to see if it changes, you know. So they know how people operate, normal people operate. And so you would think to yourself, well, once they got married, everything will be fine. No, these people, if they find somebody better than you in the first week after marriage, they'll dump you and get somebody. They don't care about commitment. They have no commitment whatsoever. That's how they are. And you have to understand that. But this love bombing phase is very important to understand, especially within male and female relationships, marriage and sexual relationships, because people can become addicted to these people's, how they treat them, you know, initially, and get stuck on that. And so they just really wish that they would go back to that person, and they never will. And that's what you have to understand. And you can't understand. The thing is, people don't understand this Jezebel spirit. They don't understand emotional abuse. They don't understand the Jezebel spirit. That's why I'm doing this series, because you think these people are normal. They're not. You're dealing with demons, okay? These are people who have been taken over completely by spirits. These are not really people, human beings, really, you're dealing with. You're dealing with devils. So you think that they are going to operate in a way like a human being. You think they're going to be rational. You think they're not just harming you just out of for fun, but they are sometimes. You know, like I said, a covert narcissist projects themselves as a decent human being. They're going to flatter you. They're going to be nice. They may be even pillars in the community. They always got a face in front of people. So just pray about people. Just because it's all good in the beginning, just like pray about all that. You know, don't run and say, oh, I can't have nothing good. It's not that God don't bring nobody good, but be mindful of, like I said, they're going to still be disrespecting you. They're still going to be doing little things here and there, but because you're in that phase of love bombing, you may overlook it, you know? So that's the first tactic. They got to be nice to you first in order to get you in. Like I said, they seen something in you that they can use. That's why they're approaching you. That's why they trying to work with you. Now, of course, this is different if you're born into a family with narcissists, your mama, your daddy was a narcissist or whatever, then that probably won't be the case. But I'm talking about people who you just out in the open walking around and you meet somebody and then it seems like this the greatest person you ever met and all this stuff, you know. Be very mindful and be aware, you know. So that's the first tactic. The second tactic here is called devaluation. And this is what happens normally with these people. This is just the normal progression of the relationship. Once you get over that phase of the flattery and everything's good, then they start showing you their mask. Okay, their mask falls off, rather. And then they start abusing you. Okay, taking shots at your character, criticizing your gifts and talents. All the things that you're good at, they start taking shots at, saying that's not good enough and all that kind of stuff, making you feel less than. I'm going to pull up some more information from another site. and read some of what they're saying here. This is from narcissistfamilyfiles.com, and they give another definition of devaluation here. It says, because of their emotionally primitive, perfect, or worthless thinking, this is the narcissist they're talking about, stuck at the development level of a young child and their insistence on unattainable perfection, narcissists in relationships with partners, family members, or friends nearly inevitably become disillusioned. And because they lack a moral compass, again, like the stunted child they are, they do not hesitate to express their disappointment in a range of devaluing, hostile behaviors, including judgment, belittlement, and rage, if not outright abandonment. So just dogging you, just disrespect, pulling you down. I remember that's what happened with me. My gifts and talents. He would take shots at my abilities and say that I'm not good enough or I'm not good at somebody else. Start comparing me to other people. Try to make me feel bad about my gifts and talents. And it was just weird to me because it just didn't make sense. Like, you praise me for him, and then you turn around and say that I'm not good enough and all this kind of stuff. It was just out of the blue. But he had to put me down to make himself feel good about himself. That's how these people live, like I said. So that's a tactic. And once you start seeing that, you know, that's the abuse right there. That's the spiritual abuse. Don't allow that to happen to you. Begin to see that and say, okay, this is not healthy. And begin to step away. But it's going to be hard because of what happened initially. What? Love bombing. All that nice stuff they was doing to you first. And you start to say, well, I miss that. I want that. Maybe they'll change. Maybe they're not. Okay. They're not going to change. That's what I want to get through to people, that once you see all the signs, like I said, I did the traits for you last time, the top five, and then I gave you 18 more. You have to get into your head that these people will never change. This is not something that you're going to wait out. You're not going to have counseling. It's not going to fix it. Telling them they're narcissists, that you need to get help, telling them that I'm going to cast that spirit out of you and all this kind of stuff, it's not going to work until they get to a place where they admit that they're wrong totally and they say, I want to change. They're not going to change. You can't cast a spirit out of nobody that don't want to change. All right. And like I said, the reason why they don't change is because their tactics work in their life. They get what they want in life. They're not happy, but it's their way of getting what they want in life. And it works for them. Okay. It works because most people don't see it coming because most people are normal. They're not. They don't have any empathy. They can walk right into people's boundaries, you know, walk all over their boundaries, disrespect people and have no kind of feeling about it and actually get what they want. Okay. A lot of them in special positions, they high positions where they stepped on people, robbed people, manipulated people to get to where they at. It works. Okay. They got to deal with God on judgment day for it, but they don't care nothing about that. It's about winning now, getting what they want now. And who cares if they hurt anybody? So when you tell them, hey, you know, this ain't the way you should operate in life to get what you want, it doesn't matter because it works for them. Like I said, empathy, kindness, that's gone. Love of God is not there, okay? So you got an empty person operating in a way that is destructive to everybody else, but they don't care because they don't have any empathy, right? So when you see that happening, so that's the next phase that they use against you. The third tactic is called gaslighting. This is a big one. This is designed to pretty much destroy your reality so that they can shape your reality to fit there. So they creating a narrative in your life and who you're going to be in their life, and they kind of alter you. Let me just read the definition that they gave here, and I'll give my own. Basically, gaslighting is, and let me just say from my perspective first, and then gaslighting is basically when they do something to you and then you confront them about it, and then they say, I didn't do that. That's basically what it's about. They may borrow something from you or take something from you, and then you say, hey, why you take that from me? And they'll say, you told me I could have this. You say, no, I didn't. Yeah, you did. And they'll go back and forth with you about that. In reality, you never told them that they could have that or borrow that, but they just want you to believe that. And they'll say, well, you didn't remember. You don't remember. And it's designed to get you to start second guessing yourself. Okay. And over time, if you believe what they're saying to you, then they'll alter your reality. They'll say the sky's red and you'll believe it. Literally, they can change that. And a lot of people have lost their minds dealing with them because they've done this to them. So this happened to me once. This guy tried it on me, but I was so adamant about what my recollection. That's because I'm pretty good with remembering things. I forget what it was, but I was so adamant about it that he just backed off and started laughing and basically trying to say as if I was just joking. I was just trying to, but he wasn't. If I would have went for it, he would have begun to gaslight me more and then alter my reality and tell me things that I didn't do or say that I did or whatever, and then have me all twisted in the head. And that's what they do. They want to make you think you stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. You didn't do this or you did. And it's like, don't go for that, you know. And it starts with little stuff. And like I said, everybody, a normal human being will look at themselves if they, and see, maybe I'm wrong. They normal people do that. We all do that. And they're banking on that because you're not expect somebody just to flat out lie to you and say you did something or said you allowed them to do something that you didn't say. You don't think that. Why would somebody even lie to me directly and just say, I said something I didn't say or something like, why would they do that? So you think this is your friend, but no, they flat out lying to you. They're making stuff up and then trying to get you to accept it. So that's my explanation. Let me read what they say here. It says, gaslighting is a form of psychological abuse in which narcissists systematically undermine other people's mental state by leading them to question their perceptions of reality. Narcissists use lies and false information to erode their victim's belief in their own judgment and, ultimately, their sanity. Common gaslighting techniques come in the form of denying and projecting. After an abusive incident, narcissists refuse responsibility, blame the abused, or outright deny that the abuse took place. They may say things like, you're too sensitive, you're crazy, that's not what happened. Why can't you let anything go? Or he says, they may say, you made me do it. The term gaslighting comes from the 1944 Hollywood film Gaslight, a classic depiction of this kind of brainwashing. If you wanted to see how that looks, you can look at that movie, but that's where the term comes from, gaslight. When people start to say that your perception of reality is messed up, in other words, we all can think, we all have perception, we can see things, and then somebody come in your life and they start telling you that's not the way you've seen it, or you got to be start mindful of that. It's one thing if you have some kind of psychological problem where that is the case. If that's been your thing your whole life where you forget stuff and you know, that's one thing. But if you're pretty decent at remembering things and then somebody comes in your life and they start telling you, you know, this didn't happen, that didn't happen, this, you got to start questioning it. Maybe, okay, something's wrong there. All right. This is a tactic that they use. Like I said, they want to keep using you. And so when you confront them about stuff, they'll switch it up. Oh, no, that ain't what happened. This, you know, this, that, and the other. So they can continue to use you. Once you see through gaslighting, you can pretty much, they'll back off from that. Like I said, that guy, he realized he couldn't use that particular tactic on me. And so he backed off. So that's what they do. Number four is divide and conquer. Now, this is when they discover that you have strong people around you, people who are able to pick up on these narcissists or Jezebel spirits. So you got to may have a strong father, you may have a strong mother or somebody or friends or family in your circle that can see that narcissist Jezebel spirit for who they are. That's when they say, well, I see weakness in this person I'm trying to use, but they got strong family members. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to separate them two from, I'm going to have to separate that person from those people. So what they'll do is they'll begin to put a smear campaign against your family members or friends and say, well, your friends or family members are this or that or whatever. And what'll happen is, They may cause you to move away from your family or disregard your family or whatever the case, whatever they can do, anything to kind of break you away from them so that they have you all to themselves. That way they can control you better and they don't have the influence from those people who can actually see them. So people have mentioned this, you know, once I got this new person in my life, all my friends went away. A lot of guys are mentioning this today. They get married and all their male friends are gone. The wife pretty much destroys all of that and tells him you can't be with them and you can't be with that guy and this, that, and the other. And eventually he's just him and her. And, you know, this is a tactic, you know, like I said, a lot of women today, because of the gynocentrism, it's made women into narcissists. You know, from child, from children, they are taught, you know, they're great and all this stuff. And we talked about how if you spoil a child, the narcissism can come out of that. They can become, you know, like this. So in this case here, I've heard this many times from men where they pretty much been isolated by their wives. They, you know, and end up in a relationship like that. But it can go, it's any woman, you know, any person, man or male or female, it doesn't matter. If you got decent people in your life, that's strong, hardcore, good people that you grew up with, and they take care of you and they love you and they respect you, and then all of a sudden now they're not good enough, they're bad people because this narcissist says so, and they want you to isolate or they want you to move away from them or something like that, then that's an indication there might be something going on there. You know, if they're solid people, if they're not solid people, then that's one thing. If they're bad people, then yeah, you probably shouldn't be around them. If your own family's narcissist, and you know, that's one thing. But if they're good people and you don't see nothing, no issues with them, and then somebody comes along and says, well, you need to get away from them or whatever, you know, they can conquer you by moving you away from your base of strength. So that's how that works there. And I had this happen to me. It was an attempt, rather. In my first church, there was a guy. Well, I'm putting it like this. There were a lot of narcissists in my first church. And the one that had pretty much put his claws into me didn't want me around this other narcissist. So he would tell me little subliminal stuff about him, say, you know, that guy can be discouraging at times, you know. Little things in my ear just so I can have in mind when I'm dealing with them that to be careful. In reality, the narcissist was discouraging to me. This man telling me that somebody else was, he was discouraging. So he was obviously projecting that onto this other guy just so I could not deal with him that much, because he didn't want him to take me away from him, basically. And like I said, narcissists will fight for their supply, their victims. So that if there's a few narcissists in the room and somebody, a narcissist owns one of these people or whatever, they're going to try to protect them from other people. So this is a little different from dividing and conquering, where you have a healthy base of people that can protect you. In this case, a narcissist will try to protect you from other narcissists simply because they want to own and control you and drain your supply and your energy and all that kind of stuff. They want to use you for yourself. They know that those other people are narcissists, and so they don't want you to get too close to them. So they'll try to keep you away from them. So they'll say bad things about them so that you can look at them a certain way, you know. So these are the tactics. Number five here is the flying monkeys. Now, this term comes from the movie Wizard of Oz, where the witch had flying monkeys to do her bidding. And so Jezebel has minions. She has people that work for her. She may or may not be using them or draining them of their own supply, draining them of their energy as well. But she has given them a false image of herself to where they all in love with her or him. So at any point you begin to come against the narcissist spirit or the Jezebel spirit, they'll come to attack you. Or if the narcissist can't deal with you directly, she will send, or he will send, the flying monkeys to harm you or to get a message to you. In the book of, I think, Kings, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, whatever, Jezebel sent a flying monkey to, I think, the prophet Elijah, I think, telling him what was going to happen to him or whatever. That was an extension of her. They have extensions. You know, they have people doing their bidding. And this is a tactic that's used. So if you know of people that are cool with the Jezebel spirit, those are potential people who could be used against you. You may think that that's your friend, but if they cool with the Jezebel spirit, don't think that they're going to turn on you at any moment, because they're with her. They believe the lies she believes. And if she or he is telling them lies about you, and that Jezebel wants them to be angry with you and harm you, they will. You know, so you can't look at them and say, well, they're not a part of her. No, they are. They're an extension. They have extensions. OK, so you have to be mindful of that. They call it the flying monkeys. That's the term that the psychological community has labeled them. But, you know, these are the tools they use. Like I said, if they can't get to you because you cut them off, they'll send a flying monkey to get you. So, you know, be mindful that there are people, if they have friends, those friends are pretty much a part of their circle, and they're part of, they are branches. And so When you cut off the Jezebel, you cut off those branches as well. You got to cut them off too. You can't be friends with those people. You can't even convince them. They have to come to the realization that they're dealing with an abusive, toxic person. They know you can really tell them. So that's what that is, the flying monkeys. Tactic number 6 here is fake apologizing or false apologizing. This is a tactic used when you confront them because they cannot be held accountable. They refuse to accept correction. They will pretend to apologize, okay? To try to get you to end the conversation, to think that you got something from them. If you listen closely to what they're saying, they haven't apologized though. And I failed for this in the past because when you're dealing with them, you don't want to fight. You don't want to do a lot of confrontation, so you end up apologizing or you accepting the BS of apologies that they give you. But it's not a real apology, and you have to be mindful of that. If a person does refuse to take accountability for their actions, you really pretty much got to let them go. But you hear things like, "I'm sorry you feel that way." That's not an apology. If they say, "I'm sorry," doesn't mean that they're apologizing. When they say, "you feel that way," it has nothing to do with them accepting responsibility for what they did. They're really just saying that, "I'm sorry you feel that way." It doesn't mean anything. Another thing they'll say is, "I'm sorry you're so sensitive." All right. Now they're saying that somehow you're the problem for their behavior. They behave in a certain way, but you're somehow sensitive. In other words, this is not really a problem. You're just too sensitive. But they throw that word "sorry" in there, and it's supposed to make you feel like they're apologizing when they're not. They don't apologize. They just won't. Now, they do. But it doesn't really matter if they say, "I'm sorry, I did this and that." If you see their behavior doesn't change, nothing's changed. So, but this is one of the things they'll do because they want to keep you and continue to use you, but they got to get past your defenses where you come at them and confront them about the behavior. And they would prefer that you accept the fake apology so that you can continue in a relationship. And so that's a tactic that they're using. So if you come across this fake apology stuff, just know that they have not accepted responsibility for their actions. They're not going to change, and they're going to do it again. And if you fall for that, they're just going to keep doing it. Okay, you really need to end it at that point. If they don't accept a responsibility, just end it. If you have no ties with this person, end it. Let me read the definition from them too, just to give you another side of it. It says here, called false apology, because narcissists refuse accountability and believe they are always right, they rarely, if ever, genuinely apologize. Instead, they may toss out a false apology or false apology, meaning to deflect, induce guilt, or antagonize. Yeah, making you feel guilty. That's one thing they'll do. Examples: I'm sorry you think I'm such a disappointment as a mother, or I'm sorry you interpreted something so innocent as unfair. I'm sorry you are so sensitive. I'm sorry you can't understand how others feel, or I'm sorry you are so angry. These didn't have nothing to do with them apologizing. But if you listen to that, you hear the word "sorry," you think that it's not. So I've learned to just, when I sit there and let people talk and they don't do anything but deflect and they give me these fake apologies, I just know that they're not going to change. They're not sorry, they're not any of that. So it's pretty much over with. You can't do anything with that. But we want them to change. We want to believe that this is something, you know, like I said, you're invested in a relationship at this point, and you don't want to just give up so quickly. And so you may let this slide, but nothing's changed with them. So just keep that in mind. Number 7 is word salad. It's another tactic. This is connected to the fake apology. So this is what happens when you confront their behavior. It's kind of a combination of what we talked about in the past, just false accusations, switching the conversation, deflecting, straw man arguments. If you accuse them of something, they'll say, "I didn't do X, Y, and Z," and they'll attack that and say, I know I didn't do that. But what they are describing is not what you described to them. But it's just by the end of the conversation, you're exhausted and you're unable to really deal with what they're saying. And that's the whole point. They don't want you to confront them, and they're going to train you. Basically, every time you confront them, this is what's going to happen. False accusation. They're going to try to get you in your feelings. So falsely accuse you of something that you know you didn't do. That way you can get angry and try to defend yourself. Now you're on the defensive, and now you're angry, and now you're getting heated. And then you're like, you need to calm down. You're just crazy. And now you're the one that looks like the one that's the problem, when in fact they're the one that caused that. They stirred up your emotions and got you to shift into a place to where you're defending yourself. You didn't lost topic. You don't know what you're talking about now. When you're the one who came with a clear argument in the beginning to confront their behavior, and they came with this twisting, this snake-like behavior where, you know, they refuse to accept accountability and they're changing the subject, they jumping. It's a big old mess, and it's designed to exhaust you. So that way you don't, again, approach them with confrontation or confront their bad behavior. That's what they're trying to train you. So every time I do this, this is what it's going to be about. It's going to be an argument. It's going to be this and that. So I'm going to get tired. And that's what they want. They don't want you dealing with them. They don't want you coming at them confronting their behavior. They just want to continue to use you, and they want you to accept it. They want you to be their punching bag. They want you to be their emotional tampon. They want you to continue just to drain the life out of you and you not say anything about it. So they this is the tactic that they employ. So be mindful of that. If you can't get through to people about their behavior, then you got to cut them off, okay? And I keep saying that this is what you got to do. But like I said, love bombing phase, that the initial love they gave you, you think that's going to come back. It's never going to come back, okay? Once you realize who these people are, that's the end. You got to let them go. They're never going to change. And I'm going to keep repeating that to you because that's the case, right? All the psychologists, they say the same thing. Great majority, they will not change. And don't think that the one you're dealing with is special, all right? You got to get away for your own health's sake. This is not about waiting for somebody to change. And of course, Christianity and the attributes of love may think that you got to put up with this stuff. But I gave you that sermon about, does love put up with abuse? And it doesn't. Okay. But a lot of people think they, because of love, they got to stay in relationships with, this is what's happening to them. No, it's not. Okay. You don't have to do that. This is not what you should be doing. All right. And it goes to a lack of self-value when you keep putting up with stuff like that, right? The eighth tactic here is called projection. And this is when, we talked about this before, where they have insecurities or things that, and bad thoughts about themselves or things that they're actually doing, but they project it onto you. So say, for instance, they are committing adultery and they'll begin to accuse you of committing adultery, digging in your pockets, trying to get phone numbers, see, you know, your phone, see what's this, that, and the other, and always saying something to you. But in reality, that's what they're actually doing. And it's a tactic to destroy your reality, to make you feel like maybe that's what you want to do, but it's not. But because they keep accusing you of it, you must be doing it, you know. So subliminally, you may think that maybe something's wrong with me. Maybe they see something I don't see. You know, I've heard guys say, my wife told me she had a dream I was doing this and that, you know, and it wasn't true. And then they find out that the wife was actually doing what she was accusing the man of doing. But this is a tactic that they use. They like to project, and it can be harmful. It's abusive, and especially when they have insecurities. So if they feel vulnerable or weak, or being to tell you you're vulnerable, you're weak, you're this, you're that, you know. You don't deserve this. You don't deserve that. And in reality, that's how they feel about themselves. But they can't never accept any kind of weakness or any kind of fault within themselves. So they always project it back to somebody else. And so you'll feel that. And that's a form of abuse. Always being falsely accused of something that's not the true about yourself. And that's harmful. And of course, like I said, it can also affect that person's reality, because they may think that maybe this narcissist has a point or something about me or stuff like that. And like I said, those words of negativity rest in your spirit, and they can actually begin to grow things that the narcissist wants to grow in you. So what they are saying to you that's not true initially may manifest and become true in your life simply because that person was speaking those words of negativity or death into you. So it's not good to be around that. So yeah, you got to deal with that. You have to, like I said, the main thing, you gotta identify these people and then cut them off. Number nine is the discard. This is what happens when they no longer feel like you're a good supply or something, somebody they can use. They'll dump you, okay? This is very hurtful, and specifically in marriages and relationships where there's been sexual contact and a bond and all that kind of stuff, because the person is dumped. They've been used all this time and then dumped, all right? And they usually dump you because they can't use you anymore. You know, you don't have enough supply. In other words, you're not giving them all the energy that you can. Maybe you're exhausted. Maybe you realize that, you know, this person ain't good for me, so you start withdrawing. When they see that, they say, oh, I'm going to dump you. I'm going to get rid of you. You're not going to dump me. And so they dump you. Like I said, they see people as just vessels to use. Like, you know, you're just a bottle of water. Once I get through drinking, I'm going to just toss you to the side and get somebody else. They have no empathy. They don't care. They don't look at you as a human being. You know, you're just somebody to use. So this is a tactic that they use, and it's very harmful and very hurtful to the person. And it's a big blow because you've been used all this time, and then you get thrown to the ground like a piece of garbage. This is what they do. Now, you can also discard them. And that's what the same word is used when you let go of the Jezebel spirit, when you tear away from them. And the same kind of thing will happen where they'll act like, well, I'm fine. I don't need you anyway. That's how they'll act. But here's what comes after that, the smear campaign. This is another tactic of theirs. This is number 10. The smear campaign is when you break away from them and they're mad because you left them. They were draining you, using you, abusing you, and you woke up and found out they were this parasite. They begin to do a smear campaign. Now, this term is used in politics where, you know, one politician will make up a lot of negative or dig up dirt that's evil or wrong about another politician and then make them look bad. This is what they do behind your back. They tell all your friends you ain't nothing. Spread a lot of lies. Go to your, you know, call your job, say you this and that. Anything they can do to harm you, that's what they're going to do. And it's all because they hate that you left them. They were using you, draining you of your life source and devaluing you and tearing you down, and they can't do that anymore. And so they're so angry and pissed off about that. So this is what they do. And this is what all of them are going to do. So once you tear away from this is what they're going to just expect it. All right. This is what's going to happen. And it doesn't matter. Oh, I'm going to just stay with them so I don't have to go through that. No, it's better just to break away and deal with the abuse for a while from the smear campaign than to continue with these people. All right. These people are no good for anybody. They don't deserve to be on the planet. They should be just exterminated. But anyway, I'm going to go digress. But the bottom line is that the smear campaign is going on. And it's even going on while you're with them in some cases. While they're using you and they're happy that they're using you, they're still talking bad about you behind your back. You know, I had that happen to me. My first Jezebel spirit was doing that. Spread just anything to make me look bad or just to weaken me in front of other people. That's what he would do. While in my presence, he will say nice things about me. Neil's great at drawing, and Neil's great at, you know, he's got our website looking nice and this, that, and the other. But then behind my back, he's spreading all this negativity. So when I begin to pull away and eventually get away, all those people, they have this idea of me that he created for them, you know, and they believe it. Now, this is another thing you need to take into consideration, that people who believe lies or things that the other people say about somebody, they haven't really had first experience with them. There's a proverb that says those who believe lies tell lies. So people who just accept lies that other people tell them about people, they also tell lies. That's why they're so susceptible to lying, you know, to lies. You know, and I also talked about this in one of my articles a while back. Just to digress a little bit about deception is that people who are easily deceived tell lies. It's one of the reasons why they're deceived, okay? Not to say that everybody who is deceived is a liar, but when you have a group of people who are at least fond of you at some point, and now all of a sudden they just switch and they believe the lies of the smear campaign, and now they're treating you funny, you got to question how those people are in their minds, you know, who they are as a people. Like, how can you believe that? Why didn't you come to me and ask me whether or not these things are true? You just accepted them and then treated me accordingly. Like, why would you do that? You know, so it just shows you what kind of people you were dealing with. So in most cases, like I said, the narcissists and the Jezebel, the places that they operate are toxic. So other people are messed up too. So you think you got friends in this circle and this church or this office environment. They all messed up too. They toxic too. They've been affected by the Jezebel spirit. And they're just as a mess as the Jezebel spirit is. You know, they may not be a narcissist, but they tell lies. They got insecurities and weaknesses, and they're bad people too. You know, so when it's time for you to part, they're gonna believe those lies, and so you cut them off as well. You know, you don't deal with anybody that's gonna treat you like that. You know, so That's the smear campaign. Best believe that it's coming. Once you break away from it, it's gonna happen. I've had tons of people do that. I mean, I've had people make videos about me, you know, actually YouTube videos about Neil because Neil told them something. And it's like crazy, you know, but this is the way it is. This is the way it is for these people. This is the way it is. You got to deal with it. Yeah, your reputation is going to be messed up a little bit, but don't worry about that. Number 11, this is a bonus, and this is not really, this is another tactic that they use. It's really not. It's just what they do once they run out of supply. So what happens in the Jezebel spirit's life is that they, like I said, they have messed up interpersonal relationships. In other words, people come in their life, it's like a revolving door. People come in, they start using them, the people wake up, they leave, or they discard them, one of the two. And so at any point in their life, a Jezebel will be empty, don't have nobody to control and dominate. And so what will happen is they do something called hoovering, where they come back to you. So a year later goes by and you get a text from them, an email, a call, you might see them in a grocery store or something like that, and they're trying to reconnect. And at this point, they act like they ain't done nothing to you. They abused you for all those years. They ripped you off. You told them they were wrong. You left them, and then they come at you like, "Hey, what's up? How you doing? Just seeing how you doing." That's what I got from this one guy in particular. The first Jezebel coming back a year later, 2 years later, rather. Talking about, "Hey, how you doing? Just seeing how you act as if nothing's happened, as if I don't see what he's doing. As if I'm some type of person that misses him or something." These people actually think you miss them. That's how polluted in their minds they are, especially when you cut them off. Now, what they're attempting to do, what this guy was attempting to do, was to get me back in his circle again. Why? He had no supply. He had nobody he was currently manipulating and using or draining, or who was a good enough supply for him. Because they still may have some people they're using, but they're just not getting enough from them. And so they look back at the person they got the most out of. And so they circle back around, and they may even use those love bombing tactics to start flattering you again. And like I said, for ladies who your man was a narcissistic spirit and he left you or dumped you for another woman or something like that, he'll come back around. If that other woman wakes up and sees that he's a narcissist and leaves him, and now he's by himself, he may try to come back to his ex-wife. He may, you know, or if it's a woman, the same thing. They'll pop back up after 2 years. And it's like, what happened? Yeah, your people left you because you're a bad person. You were using people and abusing people. Now you're by yourself. But you know what? They're not repentant. They may say they are. They'll come back. "Hey, you know, I'm seeing how you're doing, this, that, and the other." They're just trying to suck you back and use you again and abuse you again. That's all they're trying to do. They want to rekindle the relationship so they can use you again. This is called hoovering. It comes from the word from the vacuum cleaner called hoover, where it sucks things up. And so that's why they call it that. It's hoovering. And it may start with a flying monkey trying to see how you're doing and where you at. And then from there, you may hear from the narcissist again. And they say, "Hey, you know, let's meet up and let's hang out and all that stuff." Don't go back. Okay? Don't go back. So these are the tactics of the narcissist, the Jezebel spirit. Be mindful of these. These are what they're called. You know, I always like to have a word for what people are doing so that I can say, okay, that's what that is. You know, so I'm going to go back in reverse here. Number 11 is hoovering, where they try to get you back after discarding you. And let me say this. They can discard you. And that's the worst thing, because some people, for women in particular, like they had a narcissistic dude. And he just dumped him and then got somebody else or whatever. And then he comes back. It could be hard for her because she may have been left with, they don't leave you with closure, especially if they dump you. Because they might ghost you, meaning that you just won't hear from them. They just dip off the scene. Like a guy, he just may leave and just, that's it. Or your woman may just leave and not tell you nothing. And that just leaves you with no closure or anything like that. And if you remember those days of love bombing where they actually treated you right, you may be more susceptible to accept them back. And that's where they're just going to keep harming you again. Look, if you discard a narcissist or if they discard you, it's a good thing. It's a good thing when they dump you because they realize they can't use you, or they used you up. Good. That's a good thing. You don't have to be with them. If you dump them, great. You realize that you're worth more. You're not going to be used. Great. Don't ever get back with these people. Okay. Let them starve to death. Or let them find somebody else to drain off, but it won't be you. All right. So hoovering is when they try to come back and suck you back up. Number 10 is a smear campaign, where they talk all bad about you to all your friends. And I had this happen to me multiple times. If you cut a Jezebel spirit off, they're going to talk all this mess about you, especially if you're in a community. Like I said, I was part of a couple of churches. And so each church I was a part of. So number 9 is discard. It's when they dump you. That can be very harmful to you and hurtful, but it's a good thing. Number 8 is projection. They try to project their negativities onto you, accuse you of things you didn't do when it's stuff they actually doing themselves. Number 7 is word salading, where they twist words and just mix up stuff so that you can stop confronting them and arguing about their behavior. They want to exhaust you so that you not confront them about their behavior. They don't want you dealing with them. So that's what word salading is. Number 6 is fake apologizing, meaning that, you know, they're going to give you something that sounds like an apology, but it's not really an admission of guilt and fault. And of course, they're not going to change their ways. So it's a tactic just designed to keep you, to give you something so that you can stay with them. They know you want to hear an apology. They know you want to see change, but they're going to give you something that seems like, but it's not a change. It's just a bone. It's something to throw at you to make you feel like, okay, we had a discussion. But if the discussion does not end with admission of guilt and a list of what they're going to do to change and how they're going to clean up the mess, then there's no sense of going on. And we have to be mindful of that when we're listening to these people. Divide and conquer is number 4 here. Whoop, I'll just skip one. Number 5 is the flying monkey. So these are extensions of the Jezebel spirit, people used against you that are in cahoots with the Jezebel spirit. Number 4 is divide and conquer is when they try to get you away from strong people that can help you and keep you healthy. They want to get you away from those, so they'll try to move you away from your family or strong friends that can see the person for who they are. Number 3 is gaslighting. We talked about that. Pretty much trying to alter your reality and tell you things that happened didn't happen, make you feel stupid and crazy, and to where you defer to them about your reality. Now they can mold whatever world they want for you because you can't confidently accept reality for what it is. They've changed your reality, basically. Number 2 is devaluation. That's the process of just disrespecting you constantly, tearing you down, making you feel low, constantly digging at your gifts and talents and making you feel less than and second guess yourself and all that stuff. And number 1 is love bombing. That's the first initial tactic they use to get in good with you so that you can invest and trust them. And then that's when they begin to use you and drain you and all that kind of stuff. So I hope these were helpful to you. You know, I know it's a long one. It's about an hour, but this is what they do. These are the tactics. And I'll have these in my show notes, sermon notes rather, and you can look at them. There's also a link to the site that I was reading from as well. So you can look at more psychological terms for narcissism and get more information about that. I also encourage you to look at my playlist, the YouTube playlist that I have in sermon notes. Dr. Romana is the Indian woman you see on the front cover of that she talks about it real well. She does a lot of talking about narcissism, and she's a good communicator. And I encourage you to look at and subscribe to her channel because that's all she really talk about. You know, she talk about other disorders because she is a psychologist, but primarily she's been breaking down narcissism because she believes it's an epidemic, and a lot of people do, and it's a lot of people like this now. A lot of people are narcissists. A lot of people got the spirit of Jezebel. Okay, and so she gives you a lot of answers shortly about every niche situation. Maybe it's your mother is a narcissist, maybe it's your father is a narcissist, maybe you're on a job, maybe it's this or that. She has all these answers, and so I encourage you to look. And of course there's other narcissist channels, YouTube channels that talk about this as well. And it's designed to educate you so that you can be spiritually strong and not fall for these abusive tactics. Because we have not been taught what spiritual abuse looks like. We've been taught what physical abuse looks like. You know, we don't know what's happening to us on a psychological level. And once again, when your soul is being taken advantage of and abused, it takes down your body too. Eventually your body's going to fall too. So the devil knows this. If I can deal with you on a spiritual level, and if I can conquer you spiritually, then I got your body. You know, I don't need to hit you. I can mess your whole life up without even touching you physically. So That's why spiritual abuse, knowing about this, is more important than just, okay, if somebody hits you in the eye, they harmful to you. You gotta, no. Words can hurt you. You know, that saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words never hurt me. No, words will hurt your soul and lead to your body breaking as well. So be very mindful of that. And so until next time, walk in the spirit so that you can be mindful and see these people for what they are and get free and be blessed.